Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Their courage will astound you. Their stories will move you. Their faith will inspire you.
Welcome to Great Stories About Great Saints on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
And welcome to the Cale Clark Show. I'm so stoked and excited to be with you on this very special day, All Saints Day. 888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call me. Would love to talk to you about the two saints that I'm going to talk about today. I'll reveal those in just a moment. But once again, that number, 888-914-9149. You can also email the program. Love hearing from you. A lot of you guys have been emailing me lately. I really appreciate your feedback. Cale is the email address, cale@relevantradio.com, cale@relevantradio.com. And on Twitter, you can follow me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. I don't know if you heard the news, but Elon Musk, who now owns Twitter, is saying that I can get a blue check mark. I can get verified for $8 a month. So maybe, I don't know, I don't have the blue check mark now. I'm not that important, but maybe not having the blue check mark is the new blue check mark, since anybody can pay for it now. I'll just kind of keep it blank. But anyways, you can follow me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. So all day long on All Saints Day, we've been doing great stories about great saints. And I love All Saints Day because, number one, by this point, I am pretty jacked up on Halloween candy right now. And I've got my M&Ms here. I've got my Kit Kat bars. I've got that caffeine jolt, so I'm even more hyped than usual. But I'm also excited because I always say that All Saints Day is the feast day for the rest of us. Most of us will not get our own liturgical day on the calendar, but we still have to be canonizable saints. And really what that comes down to is two things. This is fulfilling our baptismal call to be saints. And everybody who's in heaven is a saint, but the canonized saints, there's been some miracles wrought through their intercession, two to become a canonized saint. You get one for beatification, two for canonization. And that's providing evidence that you're in heaven, all right? So that's why we know these guys are saints. They've given us some evidence that they're there. They're interceding for us. But the vast majority of us will still be there, God willing. All people in heaven are saints. So that's the goal. That's the goal of our baptism, to become a saint and to help other people become a saint. Well, two saints that I'm going to talk about today are saints that did exactly that. A saint who reminded people that all of us are called to be saints. The universal call to holiness is Saint Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei. We'll talk about him. And also later in the show, we're going to talk about one of my all-time favorites, Cardinal Newman, Saint John Henry Cardinal Newman. And he was so great in particular at helping other people to become saints, spurring them on to conversion to the Catholic Church, just as he did. He's one of the most famous converts of all history. I can't wait to share more about that with you later. But let's start with Saint Jose Maria. And you really can't understand Saint Jose Maria without understanding the context, the fires in which his life was forged, the Spanish Civil War that broke out in the 1930s in Spain. I would gander that most people in the United States don't know too much about this, but this is one of the most violent and bloody persecutions, religious persecutions, that was unleashed. It wasn't purely religious war, and I'm by no means an expert on the Spanish Civil War, but there were Republicans, there were nationalists, Catholics were often caught up in this, and there was a hatred towards Catholics. In fact, more than 4,000 priests, diocesan priests, were murdered in the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s. Over 2,500 religious monks, nuns, and also 12 bishops were killed or murdered in Spain during that time. Countless laymen and women as well. We don't even know the numbers on those. And in fact, at one point, a bloodthirsty mob thought they had killed, at the time, Father Jose Maria Escrivá. There was a priest who kind of looked like him. A mob caught him, killed him, hung him from a lamppost right in front of the Escrivá family home, the apartment building where Father Jose Maria's mother, Dolores, lived, along with his older sister, Carmen, and his younger brother, Santiago. And they saw this out the window. It wasn't him. It was someone who looked like him. And that was in the year 1936, in the throes of this incredibly brutal civil war. And so at the time, San Jose Maria, in 1936, he was only 34 years old. He hadn't been a priest for that long, but he was being hunted by the communist, socialist, anarchists that were spreading all kinds of terror, this reign of terror in Madrid, in the capital city of Spain. So what would he do? St. Jose Maria would hide out wherever he could find a place that was safe, and usually he had to be on the move constantly. It wasn't advisable for him to stay in the same place for more than one night at a time. There was a great danger that you could be turned in. There was kind of a bounty on the heads of Catholics, specifically the clergy. And there was once an absolutely horrendous situation in which he and another guy were hiding in a stuffy, hot attic for hours while soldiers were searching the home in which they were hiding. And it was an absolute miracle that they weren't found. And St. Jose Maria was in this attic hiding out with this other guy. And he said to this guy, "Look, I'm a priest." And he would not wear his priestly clothes in public because of fear that he would be killed. And he said to this guy, they're in the attic. They thought they'd be discovered. They thought they'd be killed. St. Jose Maria said to this guy, "Look, I'm a priest, and I will give you absolution right now if you want it." And this guy later said it took incredible courage for him to say that, to reveal that he was a priest, number one, because I could have turned him in. I could have just hollered to these soldiers that were looking through this home, looking for Catholics, that we were in the attic. I could have saved my own life, traded mine for his by saying, "I'm hiding with this priest. Please let me go." So it took incredible courage for St. Jose Maria to reveal himself as a priest. But he did so because he was more concerned about this guy's eternal soul. He thought maybe they'd both be killed that day. But he just said, "You've got to have courage. You've got to keep the faith." And so an amazing story. We can talk about that one a little bit more later. But most of the time, although he got out of that jam, the one place in the house they never searched was the attic, unbelievably. God was protecting them. But most of the time, St. Jose Maria and his companions were wandering the streets every day, moving about from dawn until dusk. It wasn't safe to stay in one place. One day, Father Jose Maria was told that two of his very close friends, who were priests, unfortunately were assassinated. And that was tough news to take as it was. But then someone else said, "Look, I've got a safe place for you to stay, a safe house, if you will." And he gave him a key to this apartment. And this particular apartment, the people who owned it were not there. They were out of town. There was a person living there who was a young woman. She was a maid. And this person said to St. Jose Maria, "You can trust this woman. She's not going to turn you into the authorities. She's not going to inform on you." And he thought about it. He thought, "Man, I could hide out here for a long time." And he walked the streets and he thought about it, ruminated about it. But in the end, he took the key to that safe house and he threw it into the sewer. And a friend of his said, "What are you doing? we could have both hung out there. We could have been safe there." And St. Jose Maria said, "My son, don't you realize I am a priest? Everyone's nerves are on edge right now. The war, the persecution, the murders. I can't be in this house alone. I can't risk being alone with this young woman. I have a commitment to God that's more important than anything else in my life. I would rather die than offend God. I would rather die than fail in the commitment of love, this promise of celibacy that I've made to God." And so that also speaks to the character of St. Jose Maria. And so What a horrific time in which to live. And again, most people don't know much about this, but at one point, I'm going to get to this in a little bit. At one point, St. Jose Maria and his companions had to hide out literally in an insane asylum. In an insane, you know, you think you're living in an insane asylum now, you know, with your house, the people that you live with. This was an actual insane asylum. And yet he somehow was able to piece together a somewhat normal life for himself and his friends and to take advantage of the situation. How can you take advantage of that? Well, he did. He did. He thought this was an opportunity for us to grow closer to our Lord, grow closer to him, become more holy, become saints, even here. And this is part of the key to the message of what he founded in Opus Dei. And really what God founded in and through him was God's idea, not his. He would say this all the time. He said, I'm just a stumbling block to the founding of Opus Dei. So to understand this, I think we need to go back to the beginning of the life of St. Jose Maria. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Great stories about great saints. It's November the 1st. It's All Saints Day. So let's go back to the birth of St. Jose Maria. He was born on January the 9th, 1902, in northern Spain, in a place called Barbastro. He was the first son, the second child. He had an older sister named Carmen, who I mentioned earlier. But he was the first son that was born to his parents, Jose and Maria Dolores Escrivá. And they were quite fairly well off at the time. It was an upper middle class home for sure. Doesn't mean things were easy, but in fact, it was not necessarily a guarantee that you were even going to make it through childhood, whether you had means or not. And tragically, great tragedy touched the Escrivá home. And when San Jose Maria was about 2 years old, he got a very, very serious infection. In fact, a family doctor came to the home, and he actually said, he's not going to survive the night. He is not going to survive the night. You better call the priest. And his mother, Dolores, prayed to Our Lady. And she basically said, look, if you can somehow intercede that my son would be healed, my firstborn son, I promise that when he is healed, I'm going to take him on a pilgrimage. I'm going to take this little boy to a shrine that was called Our Lady of Teresiudad in Spain. If he survives, I promise I'll take him there in the mountains. And he did survive. He survived the night. He lived. It was a miracle. And she was good. She made good on that promise to Our Lady. And in fact, shortly before he died, much, much later, decades later, St. Jose Maria supervised the construction of a monumental shrine in Teresiudad, dedicated to Our Lady of Teresiudad in Spain. It's a conference center. I have not been there personally, but I know many people who have. And it is an absolutely gorgeous shrine. And that he really wanted there to be a lot of confessionals there. He wanted this to be a place where people could reconcile themselves with God. So in the basement, there are just dozens and dozens of confessionals. There's a conference center there. People can go deeper in their formation, go deeper in what it means to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, called to be a saint. So that was to be much, much later. But having survived this brush with death, he wanted to be an architect. That was really his dream growing up. But like I said, the family would meet with tragedy. Although St. Jose Maria himself survived as a young boy his illness, but he had three younger sisters who did not survive. They died one after another in his youth, and he actually thought at one point that he was probably going to be next, and he wanted to be an architect. And one day he walked in, and his older sister Carmen and her friends were kind of playing a game. They had a deck of cards, and they kind of were trying to build this structure, this sort of castle with the house of cards. And young Jose Maria, in a bit of a fit of rage, he knocked it down. He knocked down the house of cards that they were building, and he said, "This is how God deals with our plans." He was angry at God because of the death of his sisters, and he was struggling to make sense of it. A very, very human reaction. And more tragedy struck a few years later. St. Jose Maria's father, his business, unfortunately, came into ruin. He got into business with a partner who proved to be not so honorable. And unfortunately, the business had to be sold. And his father actually used his own personal property to try to pay back the creditors of the company. And the dishonest business partner took off with just about everything. And unfortunately, the Escrivá family found themselves in poverty. They lost their home. They at one point had a live-in nanny and a cook, and they didn't have those things anymore. They had to move to a new town called Logroño, and their relatives never looked at them the same way again. They really felt the shame, the stigma of poverty. But St. Jose Maria said later on that despite all the hardships that they were going through, the death of three children, the near death of his own death, and the business going into ruin and tasting poverty, he said he never saw his parents fight. They always created an atmosphere of peace and joy in the home in spite of everything. How they were able to do that was really supernatural. And when he was 15 years old, a pivotal moment occurred in his young life. It was a winter day. It was during the Christmas break of the 1917-1918 academic year. And St. Jose Maria looked out the window, and he noticed that in the fresh snow, it was a very cold and snowy night, he saw these footprints in the snow, and they were bare footprints. This person wasn't wearing shoes. He said, that's strange. And he said, I got to check this out. So he went outside, and he followed the footprints, and he realized that they must have belonged to a Carmelite monk, a discalced Carmelite, a barefoot Carmelite monk. Those barefoot prints led straight up to a local monastery. And this experience really impacted young Jose Maria deeply. He said, man, if this guy can do this, can make this sacrifice for God, if he can walk barefoot in the frozen tundra, if you will, with apologies to Lambeau Field, if he could walk barefoot in the snow as a sacrifice to God, what am I doing? What am I really doing for him? And it was at that moment that young Jose Maria had this inkling that God wanted something from him. God was, in fact, calling him for a purpose. But he didn't know what it was, though. He didn't know what it was. He just knew at this point something began to well up within him. God has set me aside for a certain task. He didn't know what. So he would pray again and again, the same two prayers for 10 years. And so he finally got an answer to his prayer. Boy, did he ever. But this is a great encouragement to us who pray the same thing sometimes for years and years and years. We don't give up. So he kept praying these two prayers. The first one was, Lord, that I may see. And in Latin, it was Domine ut vidium. Domine ut vidium, Lord, that I may see. And that was the same prayer that was prayed by blind Bartimaeus, blind Bart in the gospel, right? The blind man. Jesus said, what do you want? And he said, Lord, that I may see. Domine ut vidium. And the second prayer that young Jose Maria prayed was Domina ut sit. Lady, let it be. And this was decades before the Beatles. I know there's a lot of Beatles fans here at Relevant Radio, Josh Raymond, Patrick Madrid, but this is decades before the Beatles. St. Jose Maria coined it, let it be. Speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Mama Mary says to me, let it be. So, Domina ut sit, Lady, let it be. So, Lord, that I may see, Lady, let it be, or Lady, let it be. So, he kept praying these two prayers over and over again for a decade because he knew God was calling him to something. He just didn't know what it was. So, he thought, maybe the best way I can get ready for this is to make myself as available as I can. So, he decided that he would try to become a diocesan priest. So this is the best thing for me because, if I embrace the priesthood, it seems like a good choice. I won't necessarily have family obligations. He's kind of wrong about that in a certain sense. As we'll find out, he did have to look after family members. But he didn't want to pursue the secular career of being an architect, which could have been quite lucrative for him. So he entered the seminary, and unfortunately, towards the end of his time there, his father wasn't people weren't necessarily wild about their kids entering the seminary, even today, or embracing religious life or vocation of celibacy. But his father accepted it. His father accepted it. And unfortunately, close to the end of his time in the seminary, his father passed away. So St. Jose Maria had to support at this point his widowed mother, his now widowed mother, his older sister Carmen, and his young brother Santiago. So he had to support them. They were depending on him. And he was able to do this. He was able to somehow complete his studies and support his family as well. So after he was ordained as a priest on March the 28th, 1926, his bishop gave the approval for him to move with his family to Madrid. And he pursued doctoral studies in civil law. And he would make ends meet for his family by tutoring students. And he would teach university students on the side. He also was a hospital chaplain. And earlier today, I believe it was on the Inner Life program, Josh Raymond was talking about St. Mother Teresa. And St. Jose Maria did something that was very similar to what she did in Calcutta. In Madrid, along with the poor, the sick, and the dying, young Father Jose Maria had a ministry to them. And he would begin this intense work with the poor, with the sick, with the dying. And he would always ask them to pray for this special intention that he had. He was trying to figure out what God wanted him to do. And he would always say that prayers of children, of the sick, and also priests are especially powerful in God's sight. And so very often these sick people would say, yeah, of course I'll pray for you. And so he got his answer on October the 2nd, 1928. He was actually making a retreat at that point, and he went into his room. There was a series of meditations, talks that were given to these priests who were on retreat. And Father Escrivá, at that moment, on October the 2nd, 1928, he said that he saw what God was calling him to do. He saw what later became known as Opus Dei, which means the work of God in Latin. What he'd been praying for all these years, Lord, that I may see, Lady, let it be. He saw this. And we don't really know exactly how this went. There's a movie that was made about him that came out in the year 2011. It was called There Be Dragons. I think it's a very good movie. The director was Roland Jaffe, who directed The Killing Fields and The Mission, very famous films, starring Charlie Cox, who later played Daredevil, which is kind of interesting. Whenever I watch this, I'm like, hey, St. Jose Maria is a superhero. He also played St. Jose Maria in There Be Dragons. We've got a little clip from the trailer of that film for you.
They've started killing priests.
We have to leave. It's suicide to stay.
Now, especially now, we have to be sowers of peace.
That costume of yours won't protect you anymore.
I don't wear this for protection.
Jose Maria, the truth is, we are born alone and we die alone. All we have in between is suffering.
I know what it is to be angry at life. Please be careful where that leads you, Minot.
Not one of us is free from human weakness.
So that movie, There Be Dragons, if you want to check it out, it provides some great context of the Spanish Civil War, in which really young St. Jose Maria was forged and where Opus Dei really grew in its infancy, despite great, great obstacles. And on October the 2nd, 1928, that's when he saw, on the Feast of the Guardian Angels, that's when he saw Opus Dei. And I think it was a pretty intense supernatural experience, but he didn't talk too much about it, at least not publicly, because his whole motif, one of the things he wanted to bring across to the world, was this universal call to holiness, which at the time almost seemed heretical because there was this mindset of clericalism, which still exists in many quarters in the church, this idea that really only the clergy can truly be holy, or only the clergy can be expected to become saints, or only those in religious life, priests and nuns and monks who are part of a religious order, can really become saints. Us lay people, we're just trying to survive by the skin of our teeth. You know, that's the mindset that a lot of people had back then and still have today. This idea that the lay people are simply expected to pray, pay, and obey, right? St. Jose Maria said, no, all of us, every single baptized believer, is called to the very heights of holiness to become a canonizable saints. And a lot of his ideas on this eventually made their way into the Second Vatican Council. In Vatican II, that's really, if you're looking for a leitmotif or a theme of Vatican II, it's that, the universal call to holiness. That's the theme of it. But St. Jose Maria was preaching this back in the 1930s in Spain, and he was being called a heretic by many. And in fact, he didn't know what to call this thing that he saw, and he was going to a spiritual director who happened to be a Jesuit priest. And this priest spiritual director said, one day he asked him, "Hey, how's that Opus Dei going? How's that work of God going?" And Jose Maria thought, "Wow, that's actually a great name. I'm going to use that, Opus Dei, the work of God. That's what we'll call this." And so his spiritual director kind of coined that phrase. He didn't really know what to call it either, but he called it that. And sadly, that very priest later became an enemy of St. Jose Maria, not because of anything St. Jose Maria did, but he began to persecute St. Jose Maria because he thought these ideas were dangerous, as did many people at the time. At that point, the Jesuits in Spain were reaching many young men, many promising young men, trying to encourage them to join the Jesuits, and no doubt many of them did have a vocation to this order. But St. Jose Maria was saying, no, you can stay right where you are in your own profession, if you're a student, if you're an architect, if you're a teacher, if you're a police officer, it doesn't matter, and you can become a saint right where you are. And people found that very attractive. And so they would kind of flock to him, and a lot of people got jealous. A lot of people got jealous in these religious orders. They began to persecute him and create all kinds of false rumors about him that persist to this day. A lot of them made it into the Da Vinci Code, the rumors that you hear about Opus Dei. We'll be right back with great saints, more great saints, more on St. Jose Maria, and also John Henry Cardinal Newman. Right after this break, it's K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
All Saints Day means all saints all day.
Incredible journeys of faith, heroic holiness.
Welcome back to Great Stories About Great Saints on Relevant Radio
and the Relevant Radio app.
Oh, welcome back to the program. This is the K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're talking about St. Jose Maria Escrivá. In just a few moments, we're going to be talking about another saint that I'm going to deal with today, St. John Henry Cardinal Newman. But first, I promised I'd get back to this. One of the more incredible features of St. Jose Maria's life, and there's so much that could be said about him, we won't be able to cover it all today. Something that's always stood out to me is what happened during the Spanish Civil War. I talked about how his life was at stake. He was being hunted along with basically anybody who was Catholic at that point. And he and his companions, some of the early members of Opus Dei, they had to hide out in certain places. One time they even hid out in an insane asylum, which I was going to say it seems crazy, but that would be a bad pun. They had to pretend that they were mentally disturbed sometimes when people were checking out the institution for people like him who might be hiding there. And in this incredibly tough environment, he was able to somehow keep people together. And not only that, not just survive, but somehow thrive in their spiritual lives. They moved on from there to being holed up in the Honduran consulate in Madrid. And they were there for quite a few months. And this kind of takes me back to where all of us were a couple of years ago when the COVID-19 outbreak first hit North America. And a lot of us were in quarantine. A lot of us were in lockdown. And we didn't know quite how to deal with this. And a lot of people, their spiritual lives fell apart. They were social distancing. They were kind of stuck at home, working from home, and just kind of going crazy with Zoom meetings. And a lot of people, their spiritual life fell apart. And it was during that time that I really thought about what St. Jose Maria and his companions did in Spain in 1936. And when they were in the Honduran consulate, a lot of them were packed into a single room. In fact, up to 30 people would be sort of sleeping in a hallway at any given time. Low rations, fear of death, fear of hunger, they're the two things that were constantly on their minds. And so instead of cracking under all this pressure, St. Jose Maria decided to take things into his own hands. And he gathered all his friends together and he said, "Look, in wintertime, the plants are hidden under the snow, but they're still there. And the farmer who owns the land, he can truly say this during the wintertime. He can say, now those plants, they're growing on the inside. We can't see them. You know, in the spring and summer, they'll come up and they'll be growing on the outside for all to see. But right now, under the snow, they're growing on the inside." So he said, "Tell me, are you growing on the inside?" And that was his approach. That was his approach during these horrific days. He said, "This is the opportunity that we have to grow closer to our Lord through growing on the inside. Let's look at our interior life." And in fact, one of the guys who was there years later, he even said, "This is one of the happiest times of my life." He said, quote, "Sometimes we thought, if only this could last forever. Had we ever known anything better than the light and the warmth of that little room we were all living in? As absurd as it was in those circumstances, that was our reaction. And from our way of seeing things, it made perfect sense. It brought us peace and happiness day after day." End of quote. Wow. Now, they were in the presence of a saint. They were living with a saint in St. Jose Maria. And hopefully, we're all living saints. But that's a kind of, they were able to experience peace and joy in the midst of very dire circumstances. And one of the reasons we were able to do that was because St. Jose Maria made sure that they lived the virtue of order. He set a schedule for the day for them so they didn't waste any time. He made sure that they slept, you know, 7-8 hours a night. And even to this day, I think the Mayo Clinic says, hey, no more than 8 hours. Don't overindulge yourselves. He made sure they went to bed on time, got up on time. It's a great way to live a personal mortification. They studied. He had one of his guys studying Japanese because he was looking to the future. He said, "One day, I'm going to send you to Japan to spread the message of the universal call to holiness through this vocation in Opus Dei, even over there." So he just had incredible dreams and incredible vision. And he realized that we need this. We need this. Without vision, the people perish. That's what the Bible says. And so he was able to get these guys to focus on becoming saints, even in the midst of all the terrors that were around them. So we can apply this too. And I'm sure our circumstances, as tough as they may be, aren't probably as bad as that. So if they can do it, we can do it as well. So St. Jose Maria, please pray for us. We need it. We need it. Again, so much more could be said, but I promised I would also talk during this program about another saint. If you want to call in, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Great stories about great saints here on All Saints Day. Gotta move now to another saint who has had a profound impact on my life, and that is St. John Henry Cardinal Newman. So once again, I gotta say, hello, Newman. Oh, okay, I thought we had the clip. I had a whole Seinfeld montage I was hoping we could use, but we'll have to do that another day. That's okay. And so, at any rate, that was a bridge too far, but we're going to say hello to Newman because he's one of the most prominent converts of all time. It's actually hard to think of really too many more famous converts in the modern age, at least post-Reformation age, than Cardinal Newman. When he converted, he was probably the most famous Anglican cleric in the world. When he converted to Catholicism in the year 1845, it would have been front page news, and it was front page news across all of Europe. It would have been something like, I'm trying to think of a modern analogy, maybe Billy Graham becoming a Catholic at the height of his fame as an evangelist. And so he just has a lot to say, especially, I think, in ecumenical relations, this idea of all Christians being reunified into one body into the Catholic Church. And he certainly didn't have the opinion that we should all just agree to disagree and sing kumbaya around the fire. Like a lot of ecumenical thinking, that's what passes for that these days. And Pope Benedict XVI used to say that the goal of the ecumenical movement is corporate reunion in one body. That's what we're shooting for here. And we long for a reconciliation within Christendom. We long for all Christians to be in the one church established by Jesus Christ. The voice of Jesus Christ cannot be echoed by churches that contradict one another. That's what somebody who has written a lot about Cardinal Newman once said, Father Stanley Yockey. And he actually wrote a book about Cardinal Newman that was incredibly pivotal in my own life. And when I was on my journey back home to the Catholic Church, at the time I was a Protestant minister, I was thinking about returning to the Catholic Church of my baptism. God just used Cardinal Newman to really help me. At the time, I was ministering in a Protestant denomination called the Christian Reformed Church. I don't know if you've heard of it, but a friend of the program, Peter Kraft, who's been on the show before, he was also a member of the Christian Reformed denomination before he became Catholic. He grew up in it. Unlike me, I grew up Catholic, left, and came back. But Peter Kraft went to a school called Calvin College, which is kind of their big school in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Very famous. It's kind of the heartbeat of that denomination. So when I was serving in that denomination, I went to a conference there at Calvin College in Grand Rapids, and I went to a famous bookstore. Being a bit of a bookworm, I went to the famous Erdmann's Discount Theological Bookstore. And if you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. Great place to find awesome theology books, biblical studies books. And what I thought was very random, but it turned out to be incredibly providential, I couldn't believe what I found there. I found two books by or about Cardinal Newman. Incredibly, they were published by the William B. Erdmann's Publishing Company of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And one of them was a book that Cardinal Newman, it was basically a collection of writings by Cardinal Newman about Mary, about Our Lady. And Mary, of course, is really key in bridging the gap between Catholics, Protestants, our Eastern Orthodox friends. She is the mother of us all spiritually, so she has a big part to play as well. But I found this book by Father Stanley Yockey, who's an incredible, just a genius, and he wrote this book called Newman's Challenge, and it was a series of essays about Cardinal Newman, and it's just profound. I highly recommend this, but there's one chapter in particular about Cardinal Newman's conversion and how he encouraged other people to convert to Catholicism who were maybe a little bit on the fence, but he knew God was calling them. That's really what pushed me over the edge. At the time, I was thinking about going back into the church. When I read about Cardinal Newman, he basically kicked me into the Tiber so I could swim back home to Rome. And I want to share with you some things that I read from Cardinal Newman that were in this book. And on the eve of his conversion, by the way, it was October the 8th, 1845. The eve of his conversion, he wrote 20 letters to some of his closest friends. A lot of these guys were Anglican priests like he used to be, very prominent in the Anglican communion. They were part of what was known as the Oxford Movement. The Oxford Movement was something that Cardinal Newman and some other friends had really got going at Oxford University, kind of trying to recapture the tradition. And so he wrote these 20 letters. I can't even write 20 emails in one night, but he wrote 20 really deep letters to some of his closest friends. And in each letter, he wrote this phrase, one true fold. And he would capitalize the letters, one true fold, a capital O, capital T, capital F, the one true fold. Now, what's he talking about? He's talking about the Catholic Church. Jesus says there'll be one flock and one shepherd. The one true sheepfold, the Catholic Church. And a lot of people who write about Cardinal Newman, they don't even talk about this. They don't even talk about this. And in one of the letters that he wrote to a friend of his, who eventually became the Dean of St. Paul's in London, he talked to this particular guy. His name was Church, last name, oddly enough. And in that letter, he talked about what he was going to do the next day. And Cardinal Newman, he wasn't a cardinal yet, of course. He had given up his Anglican orders. He was essentially a layperson at this point. He talked in this letter about a guy named Father Dominic. And he says, Father Dominic is a simple, holy man, and he has remarkable powers. He doesn't even know it. He doesn't know of my intention, but tomorrow I'm going to ask of him admission into the one true fold of Christ. And he said, look, if you'll give me half an hour someday, he said to his friend Church, if you'll give me half an hour someday, I'd love to tell you more about this. And so he wrote all these letters to his friends. And here's one of the things that he said. And he really revealed, as Father Stanley Yockey said, the innermost recesses of his powerful mind. Talk about a beautiful mind. Remember that movie, A Beautiful Mind? Well, he had a beautiful mind. It was as clear, as sharp, as bright as a diamond. When he talked about the one true fold. He wrote to his sister Jemima, after he converted to Catholicism, was accepted into the Catholic Church. He wrote this. He said, quote, if I thought that any other body but that which I recognized to be Catholic were to be recognized by the Savior of the world, I would not have left that body. So what was he basically saying? He's saying, look, if I thought that any other Christian organization could pass as somehow the church that Jesus founded or being associated with that, I wouldn't have left it. But he's like, the only body that I can see that would be recognized as the church by the Savior of the world would be the Roman Catholic Church. He also wrote another letter to her just a few days later, and he said it would have been a betrayal of truth, and he capitalized the word truth with a capital T. It would have been a betrayal of truth if I had kept others from knowing about this. My most considered conviction that the Church of Rome was the Catholic Church. It's not a denomination. It's not just any old church. It's not one among many. It's the universal church that was founded by Jesus Christ. And he says, if I don't tell people about this, I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't live with myself because that would mean I'd be depriving other people of the chance to know the truth. And here's a quote from him. This is what he wrote to his sister. He said, quote, what a doom would have been mine if I had kept the truth a secret in my bosom. And when I knew which the one church was and which was not part of the one church, I had suffered friends and strangers to die in an ignorance from which I might have relieved them. End of quote. Wow. What a doom would have been mine if I had kept the truth a secret. If I just kind of locked it in my heart and said, I believe that the Catholic Church is the true church founded by Jesus Christ, but I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm going to keep this a secret. I know it's true. I believe it's true, but I'm not going to tell anybody. He said, I could have relieved these people of their ignorance. I could have told them about this. And God's not going to hold me guiltless for this on the last day if I don't do it. As Father Stanley Yockey said, quote, he knew which was the pain to be dreaded more, the temporal pain he would feel because he had to pain others, or the eternal pain that he would eventually suffer by choosing not to pain them, and thereby not to inspire others to convert as he did, end of quote. So yeah, he knew that if he told people about this, he would lose a lot of friends, and he did. He lost so many friends because of his choice to become Catholic. But he made a lot of new friends too, that's for sure. All throughout the centuries now, he's made a lot of friends by his example. And now, of course, his canonization, we know that he's in heaven praying for us. So he was really concerned about the souls of others, and that's why he talked about this stuff with people. He was known as a guy who had just an immense capacity for friendship, and he knew that, look, if I'm going to be friends with somebody, to carry friendship to its logical end, I have to try with all my might to help them find salvation. Because all friends, now he didn't say this, but we know this, all friends share with one another what they think is good. Hey, here's my favorite restaurant. You should check it out. Or here's a movie that I watched. There Be Dragons. You'll love it. You'll love it. It's about San Jose Maria. Well, we share about our favorite things. Well, we should also be very eager to share with people the path to eternal salvation. And if we don't, we have to question, how concerned are we about our friends? And, you know, this got to come up naturally in conversation. There's certain times and places for this, but But this is a big part of the deal. And so a lot of these letters from Cardinal Newman that he wrote to his friends about his conversion, about what he felt was the necessity of becoming Catholic, they were kind of unearthed. They were discovered in the 1960s. And at the time, there's this, as Yaki says, this ecumenical euphoria, this idea that, hey, we can just kind of all agree to disagree. But Newman's letters kind of shocked people back to reality in that sense. And so I think it's a good corrective for a lot of misunderstandings about what the church was all about. There's this theory called the branch theory. I don't know if you've heard of it, that, you know, there's this sort of trunk growing out from the ground. This is the church, like a tree. And there are different branches. There's the Anglican branch, there's the Orthodox branch, there's the Catholic branch, but they're all kind of the same. And Newman is like, no, that's not right. The voice of Jesus Christ cannot be echoed by churches that contradict one another, that teach different things. And let's not make any mistake about this. They do contradict one another about very important questions. Questions about what? Faith and morals. Faith and morals. What's faith? It's what to believe. What's morals? It's how to live. What to believe, how to live. It's super important. And so that's something that he always was really strong about. And another thing, too, that he said was that unless somebody saw or heard the voice of Jesus Christ in the teaching of the Catholic Church, it really doesn't make any sense to become Catholic unless you actually think that this is the mouthpiece of Jesus Christ. This is the voice of Christ echoing through the centuries, through her teaching, through her magisterium, through her teaching office, through sacred scripture and sacred tradition, all speaking with one voice. Because if you don't think that this is truly the Church of Christ, if you become Catholic, you're probably doing it for a human reason. You know, well, my wife's Catholic, so I'll do it. Or I'm doing it to please someone. I like it better. No, the only good reason to do it is because you think it's true. That's what another convert said, G.K. Chesterton. The only good reason to become Catholic is because you think it's true. That's the ultimate reason. Now, there's a lot of other great things about it as well, a lot of great benefits. But the truth, that's something that Cardinal Newman was so strong about. He kept reminding people, you've got to belong to the one true fold. He once wrote a letter, another letter, to a lady named the Marquise de Salvo. She was the wife of a Sicilian nobleman, if you can believe that. And he wrote her this letter on December the 18th, 1845, soon after his own conversion. He said, I earnestly exhort you to join the Catholic Church. It is necessary for your salvation, considering your present state of mind. End of quote. Now, why did he say that? Because he knew that she had got to the point where she pretty much thought, I think the Catholic Church might be exactly what it claims to be. And he says, well, given where you're at, you have an obligation to follow the truth wherever it leads, right into Rome. Now, you might not like that because she came from a Protestant background. She was worried about what her family might think, what they might say. Well, he spoke to that too. He said that in the letter. He said, God will support you under every trial he puts upon you, and you will have the strength of the whole church and of all saints who ever lived. End of quote. That's a great thing to bring up on All Saints Day. So he got straight to the point. And as Father Stanley Yaki said, he said, look, Newman quickly removed any psychological excuses that she might have been building for herself why she shouldn't become Catholic. He went straight to the point. God will support. Yeah, this could be a trial for you, but God will support you under every trial he puts upon you. You'll have the strength of the whole church, of all saints who ever lived. They're cheering for you. They're praying for you. Like it says in the letter to the Hebrews, it's a great cloud of witnesses. And so I just love this chapter in Father Stanley Yaki's book about these letters that Newman wrote. And as I was reading this, this was incredibly convicting to me. Because at that point, that's where I was at. I was pretty certain that wow, this Catholic stuff keeps coming up correct every time I look at it, when I'm looking at teaching on the Eucharist. Here's another thing. He wrote to friends about this as well. He wrote to a friend named Edward Pusey, who for over 50 years, he was a professor of Hebrew at Oxford University, one of the leading figures of the Oxford movement. He was also an Anglican priest. He wrote to Edward Pusey about the Eucharist. He said, quote, excuse this freedom, do not let me pain you. I am in a house in which Christ is always present, as he was to his disciples, and where one can go in from time to time through the day to gain strength from him. Perhaps this thought makes me bold and urgent, end of quote. What's he talking about? Well, where he was living, there was actually a tabernacle there. Our Lord was present. Jesus was in the building. And so he could actually go down there and pray and talk to our Lord, and he knew that he was there. And he said he's present just as he was to his disciples, and I can go in there whenever I want and get strength from him. And that's what's given me the strength to tell you, hey, you should go for this as well. He wrote to somebody else, Mrs. Bowden, and he talked about this, again, the Eucharist, and how important it is. He said, quote, he talked about the extreme ineffable comfort of being in the same house with him who cured the sick and taught his disciples. But now, after tasting of the awful delight of worshiping God in his temple, how unspeakably cold is the idea of a temple without that divine presence. What's he talking about there? He's saying, well, now that I've been in the Catholic Church and I know the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, I can't imagine going into a church, quote-unquote church, that didn't have a church with a small c, a worship building without a tabernacle, without a valid Eucharist. And I know this is kind of a subjective argument, but I don't know if you've had this experience. When you go into a Protestant church building or even a Catholic church, say on Holy Saturday, where the tabernacle is empty, it's just a room, as beautiful as it may be. The divine presence isn't there. And you can sense that. You can sense that. And so that's an important thing as well, that Christ is present in the Eucharist. That was one of the big reasons why Newman became Catholic. Do we feel that urgency to evangelize as he did? Do we feel that? And another thing he wrote to friends, another guy named Hanmer, in December of 1845, he talked about two things in a letter that he wrote to him. He said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, sometimes we have this idea that before we become Catholic, we got to clear up every possible question that we have about it. And we all know people like this. I've got a lot of friends like this too, that they look up these extreme incidents in church history and any obscure event you can possibly think of and say, well, this is a good reason not to become Catholic because this happened, you know, in the 5th century or the 6th century or whatever. And the first time Cardinal Newman went to Rome, it was such a disaster. The church was such a disaster at that time. He said, man, if this thing wasn't from God, if Jesus Christ didn't found and keep the Catholic Church going, it simply wouldn't exist because on a human level, there are issues, okay? There always have been sinners in the church. And so we gotta face up to that fact as well. But the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And one of the things Newman always said is that, hey, if you start living this Catholic life, you'll know that's true. And that's what Jesus said. If you want to know whether I came from the Father, do the teaching, live the teaching, says this in John's Gospel. And then you will know that I came from the Father. So two saints for you today. We've run out of time. I wish I had more. But I encourage you to look into the lives of these saints yourselves. St. Jose Maria Escrivá, St. John Henry Cardinal Newman. They're so challenging to us, and they encourage us to be saints too. Great stories about great saints. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. I want to thank you for listening today. Jim Shaper produced, Patrick Alog worked the phones. More coming up. Trending with Timory. She's got some saints, or at least one saint of her own, that she's going to be talking about. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. And of course, Father Rocky will be along on this great day with the Family Rosary across America. For now, I'm Cale Clark. God bless you. Peace.